When Julianne Smith was nominated as the U.S. ambassador to NATO, our country had just faced President Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan and was trying to reestablish the transatlantic alliance that former President Trump had left on shaky ground. But what came next was even bigger: Russia's invasion of Ukraine. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. U.S. Ambassador to NATO and Xavier University grad Julianne Smith visited Cincinnati last week and joined us in our studio to talk about the work of NATO and its impact on the U.S. in a recorded interview. Welcome, Ambassador Smith.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back in Cincinnati.
Well, great to have you here. So as we record this interview, the debate over aid to Ukraine looms large in the House. Ukrainian President Zelensky has said his country will lose the war without this support, and other countries could be attacked. In your assessment, what's at stake with this?
Well, there's a lot at stake. First and foremost, the Ukrainians are obviously defending their territory against unprovoked Russian aggression, full stop. That's their first priority, is to get their country back and get Russia out. But Ukrainians are also defending our collective values. They're fighting for all of us. They're fighting to ensure that Russia doesn't keep going. History has taught us a pretty simple lesson over many years, and that is when dictators or authoritarian leaders are not stopped in their tracks, they keep going. And what we don't want to see is for President Putin to prevail in Ukraine and then keep moving westward into NATO territory, because there the United States has a sacred obligation to protect our NATO allies.
And Ukraine itself is an example of this, right, with Russia's previous incursion into Ukraine.
Absolutely. Russia came into Crimea in 2014. Putin assumed that the response to that was one of acceptance, that we could live with those actions of infringing on another country's territorial integrity. And so he made the assumption that his troops could march all the way to Kyiv and take over the entire country, and everyone would look away. And in fact, the opposite has happened. Russia has failed to achieve its strategic objective. It has faced defeat in the sense that it has not been able to take over Ukraine or march all the way to Kyiv. And the West is not looking away. Europeans, each and every day, every member of the NATO alliance is providing critical economic, humanitarian, and security assistance to the people of Ukraine. All of us are working together to ensure that the Ukrainians can prevail.
Give us a picture of the current situation in Ukraine.
So Russian troops occupy some 20% of the territory in Ukraine. The lines are a little bit still at the moment because of the weather. The fighting in winter tends to drop off a little bit. We've seen instances of small Ukrainian victories and small Russian victories, but the concern is as the weather warms, we're going to see a much more aggressive Russian posture with a larger offensive on the move, trying to break through the existing lines. But I will note that while the actual scene on the battlefield has been somewhat stagnant in recent months, Russian attacks on cities in Ukraine have been intensifying. The Russians not only go after Ukrainian troops, they love to pursue indiscriminate attacks on Ukrainian civilians, hospitals, schools, maternity wards, you name it. They've killed thousands of Ukrainian civilians, and right now they're aggressively going after Ukraine's critical infrastructure with the attempt to leave the people of Ukraine in darkness and in the cold.
Polling in February found U.S. adults are divided along party lines when it comes to military aid for Ukraine. And when it comes to Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana, a lot of people have worries closer to home. You've discussed the stakes for the world. What else should we know about this war? What are the stakes for us here in the United States?
Well, NATO exists, the NATO alliance, so that it can provide peace and security that enables our economies to grow and our societies to flourish. And NATO is there to ensure that that stability can be preserved. And so NATO is working day in, day out. Collectively, NATO allies are working to bring this war in Ukraine to an end so that we can preserve that stability. But again, if we allow this war to keep going and turn into a much bigger war where the United States and other NATO allies would need to get engaged, the price tag, of course, would be much greater. So for a fairly small price, by supporting the people of Ukraine, we can help them bring about an end to this war, send a strong signal to Putin that he doesn't get to try and attack another sovereign country. But also, I would note, send a clear message to China as it thinks about the possibility of some sort of action in Taiwan, that they would face also a united global response. So this is important not only to the takeaways that Russia will have, it's important to how China looks at it, but it again feeds back into our economy by preserving stability. Second thing I would say is that when Europeans provide support to our friends in Ukraine, they usually purchase American weapons. We are best in class. Ukrainians want to have our armored tanks, our ammunition, our air defense systems. So Europeans have invested $120 billion U.S. dollars into the U.S. defense industry. What does that mean for the United States? It means jobs. It means that production lines can remain open and that we have a direct impact, or we feel that direct impact here in the United States from Europeans doing the right thing by supporting our friends in Ukraine.
I'm talking in this recorded interview with U.S. Ambassador to NATO, Julianne Smith. Ambassador Smith, the Washington Post reported April 8th that Russian trolls are working to undermine public support for Ukraine in this country and stir fears over border security and economic tensions. What do you make of that?
This is a classic play on the part of the Russians. They have relied on disinformation for many, many years. And by the way, the Chinese are learning some important lessons from their friends in Moscow about how useful disinformation can be, campaigns can be, in terms of dividing societies from within and dividing Europe from the United States. So what we see right now is a concerted effort on the part of the Russians to spread disinformation throughout the United States, to reduce support for Ukraine, to reduce support for the NATO alliance, an alliance that the United States helped create and that every U.S. president for 70 years has supported. So we want to call out what Russia is doing. We want to warn them about the use of disinformation, but most importantly, we want to help our fellow Americans understand not to fall for this classic play or tactic on the part of the Russians. And we, and let me say, one of the reasons I'm here in Cincinnati is to set the record straight. I came back to the United States from Brussels, back to one of my favorite cities, to talk to Americans, to veterans, to students, to the mayor, to a variety of groups about the facts on the ground, why this support to Ukraine matters, and why the NATO alliance matters, and why we should all be excited that the United States is hosting the 75th anniversary summit for NATO this summer.
Hmm. When you were nominated for this position, there was no ground war happening in Europe. Now we have Russia's war in Ukraine. We also have Israel's war in Gaza. How have these wars changed your work?
Well, you're right. I was confirmed in November of 2021. The war had not started yet. We had a clear indication at the time that Russia was preparing to invade Ukraine, and we were working tirelessly at that moment to share an unprecedented amount of U.S. intelligence with our allies so that we could all get on the same page and prepare for what Russia was about to undertake. But Ukraine consumes our work at NATO day in and day out. I would say we spend 75% of our time focused on looking for additional ways to help our friends in Ukraine. But NATO is an alliance that's taking on also future challenges. We also work on things like cybersecurity, space, emerging and disruptive technology, and climate security. So while NATO is grappling with a war in Ukraine, it is simultaneously preparing to address future challenges. And we'll be spending a lot of time this summer talking about that. Gaza is not something that NATO works directly on. But as you might imagine, there are a variety of views across the alliance on what's happening in the Middle East right now. We do talk about it, as these are our closest allies and most capable allies. So it is an incredibly busy time. We feel that NATO has to take what we call a 360-degree approach. So we look to the east to what Russia's doing. We look to our southern tier for instability, whether it exists on the Mediterranean or in the Middle East. We look to the north and the Arctic region, and of course to the North Atlantic as well. So it is extraordinarily busy, but what I will say is the amount of unity that exists inside the alliance is just remarkable. We have a clear sense of purpose. We know why we are there at NATO. We are focused at the job at hand. And no one is distracted. We're not looking away. We're not getting tired of supporting Ukraine. We're doubling down and ensuring that Ukraine has what it needs to prevail so that Russia and China get the right signal that this type of aggression is absolutely unacceptable.
You talked about some of the other work that NATO's doing while focusing so intently on Ukraine. And I believe you mentioned disruptive or dangerous technology. Is AI a part of that? I mean, we were just talking about disinformation, and there's a lot of concern about the role that ever more sophisticated AI is playing in that. Does that feed into what you all are working on at NATO?
Absolutely. We spend a lot of time talking about the impact of artificial intelligence on military operations and on the battlefield. We talk about the use of AI by countries like Russia or China to get out their disinformation campaigns. We talk about how AI can erode our collective technological edge. We spend a lot of time at NATO talking about how to preserve our technological edge and make sure that China doesn't succeed in eroding that edge. So we are simultaneously keeping track with these new challenges. You know, NATO was created to essentially deal with conventional military threats. NATO was designed to cope with tanks rolling across borders. That was 75 years ago. But what I'm here to talk about on this visit is to help Americans understand that NATO today is still a military alliance. We're still prepared for tanks rolling across borders. If Russia gets any ideas about crossing into Russian NATO territory, we know what we're going to do. We know how to respond. We're prepared for all contingencies. But NATO is also looking at a much broader definition of security today that enables us to look at everything from protecting critical infrastructure, to looking at undersea cables that might be cut in a conflict, protecting our energy grids and our supply chains. So NATO is fit for the future. It's defending our future, and it is stretched beyond just that very narrowly defined definition of security.
We're in a presidential election year this year, of course, here in the United States. The former and possibly future President Trump said he would encourage Russia to, quote, do whatever the hell they want, end quote, to countries that don't meet defense spending targets. What's your response to talk like that?
Pretty simple response. Encouraging the Kremlin to attack NATO territory is at its core irrational, it's dangerous, and it's incredibly worrying. And it really poses a danger to American troops and poses a danger to allied troops. So we are sending a very clear message, a different message to Russia, that we are prepared to cope with any attack on NATO territory. And NATO is there to serve as a deterrent deterrent. And for 75 years, we have deterred Russia from attacking NATO territory, and we want it to stay that way. We've done a lot in recent years to enhance deterrence on the eastern flank. We have what's called new regional plans that provide clarity on what allies need to have in hand to protect every inch of NATO territory. We've moved posture into Eastern Europe, and we've created new multinational battalions up and down the eastern flank. So NATO is on the move in terms of returning to its core mandate of collective defense and taking concrete steps to ensure that its deterrence and defense posture is stronger than ever.
What consequences could this presidential election have for NATO?
Well, it's hard to get into hypotheticals. Here's kind of where I put my faith and confidence. If you look at polling data in the United States, you see that public support in the United States for the NATO alliance is actually increasing. Why? Because I think most Americans fundamentally understand why we created NATO 75 years ago and why it's still resilient and ready and relevant to today's challenges. So we've always had large majorities of Americans supporting the alliance. It traditionally isn't a partisan issue. I would also note in Congress, we have delegations come through Brussels on a regular basis, Democrats and Republicans visiting. I've never seen any real divide in how Republicans and Democrats look at the NATO alliance. I see strong support in Congress. So I put my faith and confidence in the American people and also in members of Congress that understand that for 70 years, all U.S. presidents of all political stripes have committed themselves to this alliance, and I know that will continue.
Is there anything you feel is generally misunderstood about NATO and its allies?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you asked that question. Sometimes people get confused on the subject of defense spending. So sometimes it feels like some folks have the impression that NATO is a club and you pay dues to the NATO alliance and that some allies are delinquent. And let me just set the record straight here. 10 years ago, the alliance committed to have every ally spend 2% of their own GDP on their own national defense, full stop. And when we made that pledge in the alliance, we had three allies spending 2% of GDP on defense. Today, 10 years later, we have 20 members of the alliance with more to come, spending 2% of GDP on defense. And so the burden-sharing debate has completely turned inside out and upside down. And I credit three U.S. presidents with that and their leadership. I credit President Obama, President Trump, and President Biden for pushing European allies to do more for their own security, because it means that they can meet their NATO commitments and that in a pinch, if we all need to act together and operate together, they have the capabilities required to do so. So that burden-sharing debate is changing. We want all 32 members of the alliance to spend 2%, and we are well on our way, and we want to celebrate how far NATO has come on that burden-sharing debate. But I would also say on Ukraine, there's wonderful burden-sharing as well. The United States has put forward $74 billion worth of support for Ukraine over 2 years. Collectively, Europeans have spent $110 billion on Ukraine over the last 2 years. So all of us are stepping up. All of us are doing our fair share. And this is a collective project. I want to see the U.S. support continue. And I hope that that supplemental will get through Congress sometime soon.
There's been a lot of talk about how divided U.S. politics can be, are right now. With all that division, how stable is the country's role in NATO, do you think?
Well, look, NATO has 75 years of experience of dealing with governments coming and going, all different coalitions in Europe, different Republicans and Democrats leading the United States. And we cope with those changes with ease. We know that there can be shifts in national positions, different perspectives that different leaders bring to the table. But fundamentally, at its core, we've never seen a leader in the NATO alliance openly question NATO or suggest that we shutter its doors or that a country remove itself from the alliance. While we have differences around the table, it's hard to get 32 countries to agree sometimes. If you had 32 people try and pick a restaurant for dinner, it would be difficult to do that. So I won't lie. Reaching consensus inside the alliance takes time. It takes hard work. But we have deep experience in bridging consensus, negotiating, reaching compromise, listening to one another, and dealing with political transitions in all of our countries. So that's not new to us. And there, I think NATO's 75 years of experience isn't so much a liability as it is an asset, because we know how to cope with those types of political changes.
Ambassador Smith, you are a self-described NATO nerd. So explain what impact the work of NATO has on people in the U.S.
Well, I am a self-described NATO nerd. I have been working on the NATO alliance in and out of government for the better part of 30 years. It's a title I wear with pride, and I don't shy away from it.
I hear you even have mugs.
I do have mugs. Yes, we've had mugs made. But look, the NATO alliance, again, exists for a reason. It exists to bring security and peace to all NATO allies and, frankly, to the world. It fights to preserve the peace. And when we preserve the peace and we are able to maintain stability, that helps our government keep the economy on track. And again, it allows civil society to flourish. And so instability has a direct impact on our economies and the people in our societies. So our job, number one job inside the NATO alliance, is to work tirelessly every day to preserve that stability, which is so critical to the global economy and to our own national economies. And it's that simple. I mean, we often say stronger together inside the NATO alliance. And it's not just a slogan. It's what we live by inside the NATO alliance. We are stronger together. Our societies are stronger together. Our militaries are stronger together. And by joining forces, we can come together and use the strength that comes with unity and solidarity to send the strongest message possible to leaders like President Putin or Xi in China, so that they understand that those acts of unprovoked aggression will not stand.
Well, I've been talking in this recorded interview with U.S. Ambassador to NATO, Julianne Smith. Thank you so much for your time today, Ambassador Smith. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear from film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi about some binge-worthy reality TV picks. This is Cincinnati Edition.